Hi, we are Angie and Annalie, and this is Brain Basement, a podcast where two friends who used to do yoga together in a basement now chat about chaos and wellness. As moms, we understand chaos. As expats, we get what that chaos looks like when you take it overseas.
From Manila to San Jose, we share stories of living abroad and explore topics around mental and emotional well-being. This podcast is for expat moms who want to find wellness amidst the chaos of everyday life. Welcome to Brain Basement. We're so glad you're here.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Brain Basement. Happy to be with you all again. We, as usual, are going to start with a little bit of a pause in the day, a moment of stillness. By Angie.
Hi, everybody. Let's go ahead. As you know, we start our podcast with three breaths, three slow breaths to ourselves. So as you listen and sign in, just join us in taking a little time to be in your body. See if you can relax the muscles in your face, taking a deep inhale in. Knowing that in this moment you are safe, holding that breath at the top. And as you exhale, maybe thinking of the word love, feeling that release as you exhale. And then another inhale, taking in all the fresh air. Picturing the air going right to your brain. All that nourishing oxygen. And as you're ready, exhale and release. See if you can spread that release and softening even through your fingertips. Softening your shoulders and your elbows. Feeling your arms heavy. Last deep breath in, breathing in, filling your lungs, filling your belly, softening your forehead. And when you're ready, release. Letting that release float all the way through your legs to the tips of your toes. And then allowing yourself to come back to this moment, finding that little bit of stillness within you and seeing if you can carry a piece of that with you as you continue through your day or your evening, wherever you're at. Today we're talking about meditation, so it might be a little easier to hold on to that stillness and peace within you through our talk today.
Yeah, that was a perfect beginning to our chat. Because, yeah, essentially that's what we start our episodes with, right?
Yeah, a mini meditation.
Yeah, a little sampler. Yeah, I'm excited. So it's still January. We're still talking about mental fitness and how to exercise our brains, and so we are diving more into how meditation is healthy for our brains. Yeah. Any initial
research? I mean, did you research all the science behind it? Do you have?
I did, and I'm like bursting. I want to unleash the brain nerd inside. There's so much out there, you know, and some of the research I was reading said, you know, some of these results and findings aren't conclusive, but they're always finding more. And I think as meditation has become more popular in the last, I don't know, few decades, maybe even this decade, and mindfulness practices, there's just more and more research being done. But it's fascinating because one I guess I have three different studies kind of rattling around in my head. And one of them I don't have all the specifics for, but I thought it was just interesting and we can link to it. But that they've run studies on people while they're meditating and what's happening in their brain, not just like the physical structure of the brain and how that changes, but the activity in the brain and what is activated and what is not activated. And one of the things that they found in this study that I was reading was that the impact of meditation while they were doing it was also carried over into the parts of their life where they weren't meditating. Mm-hmm. So it carried over into, okay, I'm done with my meditation and now I'm going to start my day. But their brain was still functioning the same way it was while they were meditating. So I thought that was just really cool that it's not like these compartmentalized things, you know, like meditation's good for you while you're doing it, but then you hit your day and, you know, there's no impact.
Right.
But there's actually, you can just take it with you. And I'm sure like anything else, you know, it's like exercising a muscle that this is just me speaking, not a neuroscientist, but it builds on each other, itself.
Yeah. And I think that's backed up by the neuroscientists, right? Like you can see physical changes in the brain. I love this stuff too, because I think we think of meditation as sitting still peacefully, you know, under a tree in the perfect moment for 3 hours of stillness or something. But I like that as science continues to explore and the capability of science to, you know, look at what is happening in the brain and monitor that and see the outcomes of different, you know, just focusing your mind in a different way. I think it's so interesting to look at it from that science perspective, because I think of my husband as being sort of the opposite of me, and I'm more into, you know, things that would be like labeled as hippie or, and he is not interested in anything that doesn't have a lot of science backed up. And so he has read enough articles and it has come to his attention in his world that this is so beneficial to people who work all the time, who, you know, who are not in this world of looking for alternative medicine and healing arts. And so he also is like, maybe I'll try this app Headspace. You know, I like that the science is there and that so much research has been done that it's undeniable effects that are affecting your whole life overall. He's not meditating because he thinks the meditation will be beneficial to him. He's meditating because he sees the science that you can perform better, you know, or you can be more focused at work, or you can accomplish more if you are participating in some form of meditation on a regular basis. So I don't know if that's the right, you know, or it's certainly a different direction to go towards meditation, because I want the benefit of being still, of being calm for, you know, being in peace and not being in action. And so he's certainly, my husband has a different aim than me, but if we can both see that it's impacting our life, I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that as different people and personalities try it out, like you're saying, there are different motives for it. Like some people, it's a spiritual practice, or they're trying to connect with their soul, where other people, maybe your husband is, yeah, wanting more focus or mental, just mental sharpness, right?
Yeah, it's like mental agility. We're back to that brain gym where his He wants his brain to be like flexible and strong and adaptable. And
yeah, which is really cool because it can do both and kind of cater to all those different people that are trying it out.
Right.
Yeah. Another study I saw, this was done by in 2016 by UCLA, their School of Medicine Department of Neurology. And this was interesting because they were studying meditators later in life. Mm-hmm. So the mean age of their participants was 51 and a half.
Okay.
And what they saw was, well, normally the brain decreases as we age. That's normal. And they call it brain shrinkage. And it's due to the loss of connective tissue in the brain. And so that's what often makes us, you know, our memory decline and can't regulate our emotions as well. But they were looking at non-meditators and meditators, and they were saying basically that there was the long-term meditators have younger brains and that there are higher concentrations of that tissue in their brain regions that are usually depleted by aging. So it's like you can reverse some of that tissue loss. And I just thought that was fascinating.
Yes, it's like physically measurable results, right? It's not just like I feel better or someone's opinion of how it makes them feel. You can look at the research and really see, like, I love how you can build different neural pathways in your brain. That's just, I think the brain, it is more phenomenal than we understand. We're constantly learning more and more information about it. And this is good news for us, right? Like you, wherever you are in this moment or whatever you've been holding on to in your past, like tomorrow's a new day and you really can rewire your brain to think differently, to look for solutions instead of just stay stuck in, you know, this is my difficult situation and there's nothing I can do about it. Like it's really, you know, within your reach. And I don't know if it's through meditation or, you know, whatever you need and different people or even medication, you know, like all of these things have the ability to impact our brain and our mind. And then we can use them as we need them, each of our different wiring and makeup. So
yeah.
How did you come to meditation, Annalee? Like what was your first experience or like?
Yeah. Well, it had to do with you. And remember we talked about this in episode 2.
Yeah.
So it goes back to, I was in Azerbaijan, which was 2 years ago now, was when I started coming to your yoga classes. And then the class that you taught that was yoga / meditation, it was half and half, was probably the most powerful for me. I mean, I loved the full yoga classes, but at that time in my life, I was struggling with some depression and I don't know, something about starting out with moving my body for half an hour and then sitting still. I think the meditation was more successful. And by that, I just mean, I felt like I could focus more versus just doing my day-to-day activities and then straight into meditation. Yeah. There was definitely like it was a transition period doing that yoga. So yeah, that was my first introduction, was in your basement.
I never remember that. Every time we talk, I mean, I remember that story and every time we talk, cause we have a podcast now called Brain Basement. And like Annalee's been dictating for years And that was just one part of your journey. And I always am like, oh yeah. And so, did your husband think you were kooky? That's my other question. And maybe some listeners can relate. Like, does meditation seem so wacky when you start?
You know, when I started meditating, I did feel like I wanted to keep it a secret because I just didn't, people in my family don't meditate. You know, they're not meditators. And I'm talking about like my family I grew up in, and also my husband doesn't meditate. But I opened up a little bit to a couple of my siblings about it. And I don't know, at the time, maybe it was because of the depression, but I was kind of emotional about it too, because it was helping me so much. It was almost something that I didn't want to talk about too much because it would make it feel kind of trite or trivial. You know what I mean?
Right.
So for a long time, I didn't really want to talk to people about it. It was just a few friends and you and maybe a couple siblings. And then I think my husband just knew that I was doing my thing. You know, like I had my treatment plan and I was doing it, and he was totally supportive. But now when I meditate and does he think I'm kooky? He totally could. I just don't know. Because he doesn't tell me. But there could be like an 83% chance that he thinks I'm a total wacko. But he also knows that I'm like all about the science too. And sometimes I share that with him. And he's kind of like your husband, where show him the science and he's like, okay, I can make space for that.
Yeah.
But if the science isn't there, then he struggles a bit. But he's generally just like, do what you need to do, you know?
Yeah.
If that helps you, then do it. But I think, generally speaking, do you think that it is regarded kind of as a woo-woo thing? Or is it just becoming more mainstream and people are accepting it as something that is really helpful? Because I think we both live in a space where, and we talk to people who are all about it.
Yeah.
But I don't really step out of that very often. And maybe there are others that are like, you guys are nuts. I don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wonder too. I certainly come from the collective, you know, the people that I'm drawn to are the people who are doing something off the beaten path and who are looking at kooky things, right? I'm drawn to the kookies. So I do wonder, and my husband is kind of that person for me, where that he will tell me like, okay, now you're going off the deep end. Like, this is too out there. I could get on board with this, but now you're taking it too far. So I am aware that, you know, this is not the general community, does not all feel like this. Like, oh, meditation, that sounds really, you know, wise and smart and intellectually based. I will go bring that practice into my life. So I don't know if, but I think you're right. It's more mainstream. Like, everyone has heard of meditation. It's the way we were talking about journaling last episode. It's mentioned all the time in every wellness area, you know, and I think people that are type A, like overachiever fitness instructors at CrossFit are also saying like, and now we need 5 minutes of cool down and get your meditation time in. And super high powered overachievers like Tim Ferriss also promote, you know, meditation as a useful tool to add to your pocket of productivity and health and well-being and yeah, living a longer life and just being, like you said, your brain health as you age, increasing your brain health rather than letting that degeneration just happen.
Yeah. Well, and you know, athletes use meditation and visualization to increase their performance. And there's research out about that. And so I think you're right that it's becoming more widely accepted. And
I also, I wonder a little bit if the way that our culture and our world is today, just doesn't provide those natural times. Like when I think of my own childhood, I definitely remember, this might just be more me than everyone because I was an only child, but I would just sit in the back seat of the car watching out the window, you know, for 20 or 30 minutes, and just my mind was just kind of wandering, and I was just sitting there in stillness, which is kind of being bored, I guess, or sitting in waiting rooms or standing in line or waiting for my parents to finish talking. I remember that kind of thing when your mom would say she was leaving and then she'd just keep talking and you're just waiting and my mind wanders. Or I was in school and the lecture's happening, or even now I'm reading a book and three pages have gone by and my eyes are skimming the words, but somehow my mind was somewhere else. If that occurred more frequently than today, where we have a constant source of, you know, avoiding boredom is available to us with our phones and with computers and the it's like we never just sit still and get bored. Or I don't know if that comes up as often in life as it did. So if that was like a natural form of meditation or just quiet moments of thinking your thoughts that maybe we have less of now, so that we have to deliberately instill, I'll try to meditate at, you know, for 10 minutes some point today. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to look at how huge mindfulness is and that it's just booming and why, you know, I've seen research and videos out there saying it's the new way to exercise because we're evolving into a people that need something for our mind. And maybe it is because we are overstimulated and overly entertained. Mm-hmm. And the more we get it, the more we want it. And so we have to actually bring in like treatment for the symptoms of this overstimulation, over entertaining, because we get addicted, I think, generally speaking, to this, the stimulation of all these devices and information constantly coming in. And I think it's part of why depression is on the rise and anxiety is on the rise, because just the impacts of not having that balance. Maybe like you said, like as a child, you just have these huge pauses of time, you know, where you weren't doing anything. And I think if that translates into adulthood, you know, maybe years ago when they just didn't have the option to just press a button and be immediately entertained. I just think that's not how life is anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we have to treat it because it's addicting.
Yeah.
That sounds very doomsday, but I don't think it's doomsday because I think that's why I'm so passionate about mindfulness as the umbrella kind of over meditation, you know, meditation being one of the tools that can fall under that umbrella of mindfulness.
Yeah. And I think there's not like rules and restrictions as much as we think there are. I think you can find ways to meditate, you know, just by looking out the window and zoning out for a minute, or just by, or on a walk, like a walking meditation. So you don't have to be still, you're moving your body, or the meditation that we posted in the podcast where you could be in the middle of, you know, kids having a pillow fight, and just kind of sit down and decide to feel calm and just get in touch with that in while there's noise and energy and life happening around you, right? So I think people can figure out what works for them, or maybe a 5 minute, you know, sit down is okay. And maybe people want 30 minutes of total peace and quiet, or a guided meditation on an app. You know, I think there's just a lot of different ways to figure out what works for you and put that into practice.
Yeah. And there are articles out there. I wish I had specifics from these, but that you can access that talk about different personality types matching up with different types of meditation. So that's kind of a fun thing to go out and learn more about, because I think you're right. There's definitely different modes or methods of meditation that resonate more with me, or take on a different look depending on, yeah, what I need right then. Mm-hmm. So I was also reading about the why behind why the brains of regular meditators differ from the non-meditators. And these are just some possibilities that they were throwing out there. But so one of the things they were saying is that the concentration and the focused attention that is required when you're meditating may stimulate, you know, growth in the brain. And we kind of talked about that. And it kind of could promote increased connectivity and like efficiency in like the neural network. So that was one reason why. And then the other reason why was the possibility that meditation serves as a buffer for the brain and the nervous system against the harmful effects of stress.
Oh, yeah.
And chronic stress, which may reduce all these things that we were kind of just talking about a few minutes ago, you know, anxiety and depression and inflammation in the body and even brains aging quicker than they need to. And that one really rang true to me, was this idea that meditation can serve as a buffer. Mm-hmm. And to our brain and our nervous system. And one thing that came to mind was, I was, Yale has done some research on some students that participated in the Sky meditation practice that we talked about in another episode.
Yes, yeah.
So this is the program by Art of Living, where it's a breathing technique plus meditation at the end. And one of the girls that was interviewed said that she described the impact of what that practice did for her was, it was as if she just walked around with a bubble around her. And it wasn't like anything around her was changing. Her circumstances were the same, you know, all the problems that we deal with obviously were the same. But she said, I just felt like they hit the bubble around me instead of, and then kind of bounced off.
Yeah.
Versus hitting me, hitting her, and impacting her more. And so that kind of connected back to what I was reading about it impacting our nervous system and our brain, these stressors that we just carry around with us, but that meditation can kind of serve as this. I like to think of it as like a force field, because my boys are always like playing, you know, Star Wars and all the things, and they're always running around saying they have force fields. And I was like, that's what it is for me. Sometimes, not all the time, but that it's kind of just like a protective layer almost.
Yeah.
That all the stuff still happens, but maybe I just don't react the way I would have.
I think that, I think I've read that too. It just takes that 1 or 2 seconds, because the synapses in our brain, right, are so automatic. Even if we just think the simplest thought, like, gotta remember to take the laundry out of the dryer, right? It's just a simple thought that like runs through your brain. So now your brain signals to your body, like that's the way that our systems work. That makes so much sense. So your body is just like, oh, got something to do on my to-do list. Like, don't forget that. And then there's the other little thought, like, don't remember to sign up for, you know, for lacrosse before it fills up. Got to get the kids in to lacrosse. And somehow the message in our brain is like, I have a lot to do. And especially for us who, like, we move around the world all the time. So we kind of always have that looming, like, next year or in 6 months or, you know, wherever we are, like, remember, we are going to have to reset that and redo all of this. So I think that's another little added thought in our mind of there's a lot to do, or, you know, I have so much on my to-do list. And that, of course, your body has that reaction. And if there's just a little bit of a break in between that thought of like, I can do that, I can manage that, you know, if it doesn't automatically go to overload when we're holding all of that in our brain, if we just have time to sit down and say, like, these are things I can take care of today, and then the other stuff I can worry about in 6 months, it does give you that force field so that it's not an automatic reaction in your body where your shoulders are getting tight and you're like, I have a ton of stuff to do and it's all buzzing around in my brain.
Totally. Well, yeah. I was even thinking today, 11 o'clock hits, and that's when kids are off virtual school and they're all like descending into the kitchen at the same time and they're all wanting food and I have to get the other guy ready for preschool. And I thought to myself, I hate 11 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
But kind of going back to what you said, sometimes I really feel that, like, yeah, in my nervous system, in my body and in my brain, like, I can't do that is the message I'm getting back to myself.
Yeah. You know?
But I feel like meditation and some of these mindfulness exercises, they do give me that space, like that, yeah, ability to distance myself just a little bit to say, I can do this, or this is what needs to happen first, or.
And it gives you that space to hear that, I think, Annalie, right? Like, you say to yourself, like, I hate 11 o'clock, or like 11 o'clock is like the hour that everything goes crazy. And it's like, that's almost like a map in our brain, right? Like, that road is traveled and you wouldn't even know it was happening. And for a year, you could think the thought, 11 o'clock, here it comes, it's all, and then, but to recognize that you can decide, I just think like 11 o'clock, things are a little crazy, and then it's calm after that. You can just switch it a little bit. And then it's like, you still have to practice it because your brain automatically goes to 11 o'clock is stressful, but you can switch it to, it's a quick stress and then it's over, or whatever you want to think about it. Like, I love seeing that meditation can do that, and that the science can prove that we can rewire our thinking in those directions. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Good stuff. That was a lot. I feel like we kind of covered a lot of bases in meditation and maybe pulled in all kinds of kooky stuff.
But there's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
And so much science. And there was a lot of science in our episode today, which is fun. But
yeah. And I think there's different, I like the Insight Timer app. I like Headspace. And there's lots for kids to just see if they want to make that kind of an automatic practice in their life.
Yeah. And we can definitely do like a follow-up episode of, yeah, resources out there.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.